On this week's 51%, we hear from a female executive at Facebook.
A lot of the feedback will say, you know, she could be more warm or more open or more friendly. And I never see that for any man on my team.
And we bring you an essay about a wall of positivity. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. Oh, you're scheming. They don't believe it. But you want those robots to feed me. Deb Liu is Vice President of Platform and Marketplace at Facebook, and is one of few female executives in technology. Liu is working to address the challenges that women in tech are facing, both on a day-to-day basis and through a nonprofit she co-created called Women in Product. KALW Inflection Point host Lauren Schiller starts her conversation by asking why Liu thinks a Women in Product conference is important.
Yeah, you know, it started actually, we used to do these women dinners, and we actually still continue to do them, where we bring in product managers from across the industry to have dinner and just talk to one another, share stories, kind of share best practices. And at one of these dinners, we were talking about who was going to Grace Hopper. And we realized that a lot of us were actually going, and we were discussing meeting up there. And we thought, you know, that's a great conference for engineers, but there's not one for product managers. And, you know, this is a field where product management is a really important part of tech. It's really the people who help ideate and help, you know, put products together and help execute and really drive products forward. And there wasn't something for us. And we said, you know, we're doing these dinners, we're sharing. How do we actually scale this out? And so right there at that dinner, we decided we're going to put this on ourselves. This is an opportunity for us to connect with one another and the greater product community as well.
Just to define product,
yeah.
Because product, you know, you can think about it as something that you buy on the shelf,
yes,
or,
yeah,
you know, it's a toy or it's a hard good. But in technology, could you just describe,
sure,
what you mean when you say product?
So typically a product manager takes the role of the person who helps gather the cross-functional team and puts together a team of people to build something. So an example is, if there's an opportunity for us to build a new product, we'll have researchers or designers. And the person who puts that together and helps gather the roadmaps and the feedback from customers and then actually works with engineers to execute it, that's the person who really brings that together. And that's what a product manager does.
And so an example of a product that they might lead the creation of would be what?
So, for example, Facebook Marketplace. You know, there is a product manager who started working on that from the start and said, hey, this is an opportunity for us to bring together people to buy and sell on Facebook. And so, you know, that person would say, okay, well, you know, who are the people we need to gather to help build this? What are the ideas we need to bring to the table? What are people looking for? And they help assemble the team, but they also help kind of figure out what are the things we need to do first? How do we prioritize our roadmap? What does the timeline look like? And how do we get this thing to launch?
So that doesn't sound like something that requires particularly being male or female to me. What is happening in the industry right now where we would need to have conferences like this that are specifically bringing women together?
One thing I noticed early on was that in a lot of teams, actually, when I was an early product team at PayPal, it was 50-50 men-women. And a lot of early companies, that was true. I talked to early folks at Yahoo and Travelocity and other companies, and that was true. And somewhere along the way, actually, companies decided that they wanted to add a CS degree requirement to become a product manager. And so what we started— Computer science. And so what happened was, to require, you know, computer science degrees are actually awarded to women, I think, only 18% of the time now. So 18% of computer science degrees are actually given to women. So if you add that as a requirement, you can see how our field suddenly became more and more male heavy over a course of the last 10 years. And so that fundamental change happened. And at the same time, we realized that, you know, we want diverse teams to build products. We want people who represent the world and all of the different voices in the world. And that could come from men or women. And so you're seeing kind of this evolution back, the pendulum swinging the other way now. But that's happened over the last kind of, you know, 5 years or so. And so what happened was, teams that were fairly diverse to start actually went through a period where they became less and less diverse, especially gender diverse. And now on the other side, teams are saying, hey, we're excluding a lot of really talented people who can be very successful at this field. Let's actually bring that back. And so we're seeing this kind of momentum back. But during that period where they did require computer science degrees, where a lot of companies were looking for that technical skill, it actually, a lot of people never on-ramped to this opportunity. And so they didn't actually become product managers. They didn't start in these programs. And so coming out the other side, as we're hiring experienced people to lead really big initiatives, they're just, you know, the pipeline is not as good as it used to be. And so we want to change that. We want to make opportunities available, and we want to open up that door for people.
So that requirement, that was something that was just arbitrarily decided by a handful of companies that a computer science degree was something that was necessary somehow.
Yes.
And do you think that was done with malintent or what was the
Absolutely not. I think that it was done because, you know, at one point, a lot of people with product management in the product management field were MBAs. And they said, hey, has this become too much of a business field? So I think pendulum swinging to the other side is we want to make sure these people can work well with engineering, that they can understand the needs of actually developing products with a team of engineers. And so they move towards a more technical bent to solve for that problem. But I think that solving for that problem, you actually created another new set of problems. And so I think over time, you can see kind of this ecosystem adjusting to what the needs are at that moment in time.
Well, getting back to this idea of a conference where you're bringing women together to talk about challenges, from what I've observed, it seems like there are barriers that can come from a company or that can come from requirements of certain types of degrees. But it also seems like there are barriers that can come from within that we put upon ourselves as women. I guess my question is, how much of this is self-restricting within women as opposed to something that's coming from the outside? Are we getting in our own way?
I think it's both. If you look at all studies, it shows that women, for example, are given opportunities on performance and men on potential. But at the same time, if women never raise their hand and try for the opportunity because they think that they're only going to get that opportunity based on performance, then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy over time. Right. Studies show that, you know, men who are considered leaders have to be confident and women have to be confident and warm. And so, you know, so it adds an extra barrier for a woman. But at the same time, if she says, hey, I'm not warm enough or I'm not seen as a leader and I'm not going to raise my hand, that's, you know, that creates the cycle of, you know, what the rules are in the game keep you from winning. But at the same time, if you're not playing as hard as you can, you also can't win. And I think what we want to do is actually say, look, structurally, the system is not always exactly fair. But and we can fight against that. We can push against that. But we also have to change ourselves to be willing to actually take those opportunities when they come.
And so what are some examples of, I mean, for yourself, where you've observed yourself working one way and realizing that you need to switch it over to another in order to achieve what you'd like to achieve?
You know, one of the things that I've learned in my career that's most important is being open to feedback. Being willing to change. You know, a lot of times we have a very fixed idea of like what we're good at, who we are, what we want to achieve. And I realized that, you know, that's not always the path of success. But actually taking the feedback when people tell you, hey, you know, you came off as a little aggressive in that meeting, even if those words would never have been said to a man in the same position, being willing to take that feedback and say, okay, tell me more. How can I change so that your perception of me is going to work better for you? I can say, you know what, this is who I am, this is unfair. Or I can say, hey, what are the things that I'm doing that's making it harder for you to work with me? And I think those are choices that we make every day. And so I encourage everyone to have that growth mindset, men and women. If you're willing to have that mindset where you're trying to figure out where are all those pinches in your relationship, where are all those things where you're not quite there, and actually being willing to go past it, that's the thing that I think has been the most important in my long-term success.
Have you ever had a conversation with someone that you work for who has given you feedback and said, hey, would you have said that to a man?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had feedback. There was somebody who wrote feedback for me, and I went back to them and I said, hey, the words that you use were very gender specific. And I don't even know if he said something like, oh, the way you run meetings is very gossipy. And I said, can you give me an example of what that means? And can you describe the exact thing in the last few meetings we've had? And he actually said, you know, I actually used the wrong word because thinking about it, I meant that you had a very casual style, like to open the meetings by chatting about people's weekends, trying to understand, like, you know, you don't start like, here's the agenda, let's go. And I said, oh, okay, well, why did you use the word gossipy? And he said, I don't know, but that was my mistake. And I'm so sorry. And actually, he actually wrote a follow-up to the feedback to my manager saying, hey, I just want to let you know I used the wrong word. That was not fair. This is actually what I'm talking about, that it would be better for her to start her meetings in a more kind of, you know, straight out agenda way. And I thought that that was really self-aware of him. But had I just taken the feedback and said, okay, it should be less gossipy, what does that mean? You know, but actually having that conversation is very, very important. And now he understands. He's so much more sensitive to it now.
So when you bring groups of women together, what are the other types of things that come up in those conversations about what's working, you know, examples like you just gave, or what still seems to be a challenge?
I think one thing is I hear this a lot from women, is that they get a lot of feedback that they need to be more warm or more friendly or smile more. And a lot of people are like, look, we're just not naturally, you know, like that. And I think that that's hard because I read a lot of peer feedback. I read a lot of feedback. We do 360s from people, and we get feedback also every half. And it's mostly the women on my team who get that feedback.
And 360s is, just to clarify, is when someone who works for you and works with you as well as who you work for reviews you.
Okay. You get kind of surround sound feedback. And a lot of the feedback will say, you know, she could be more warm or more open or more friendly. And I never see that for any man on my team. Like, that's just something that's very unusual.
Meaning it's coming from the women or it's coming to the women?
It's coming to the women, from everybody, women and men. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really interesting about this, which is, you know, as I said, studies show that men are seen as leaders if they're confident, and women are seen as leaders if they're confident and warm. And a lot of people sense that lack of warmth as a way of distance, because their expectation as a woman leader, he needs to be warm and confident. And it breaks my heart a little bit, have to share this feedback every single time. But at the same time, I realize that that's the expectation, that is the expectation of the people around you. And we talk a lot about this as women in this industry, which is that you're expected to kind of thread this needle, right? You're supposed to be confident, but not too aggressive or abrasive. You're supposed to be assertive in, you know, you speak your mind. You can't be too timid, but you can't speak too much. You know, and you're just threading this needle all the time. And so the warmth one is also, you can't, you know, you need to be just warm enough. You need to care. And that's a really important trait that people look for in women leaders. And so I tell people, look, you know, it's unfair that there's just extra criteria. But at the same time, you can choose to just ignore it, or you can choose to embrace it. And the choice is, if this is a requirement of leadership, we can fight it, but we can also embrace it too at the same time.
Do you ever get tired of having this conversation?
Actually, no. I think our willingness to have this conversation is what's going to move the ball forward. Like, if we're unwilling to confront this conversation, we're not willing to make the implicit explicit. If we're not willing to have the conversation about the extra requirements women are put through, then we'll never change it.
So Facebook is, you know, it's interesting that you work there, and one of their leaders is Sheryl Sandberg, who has made a name for herself with Lean In and you know, and has been very vocal about the role of women in the workplace. And do you think that your ability to forward these ideas at Facebook is a direct result of her leadership? Or what is your sense of the importance of having someone like her at the top of a company?
I think having Sheryl not just at the company, but in the industry is very important. Having someone in this industry where that is heavily male who says, hey, let's have this conversation, but somebody who's just willing to be a voice to say, hey, let's talk about the things that we've been unwilling to talk about for a long time, the things that hold us back. I think that that has made the conversation welcome, not just also in our industry, but across the world. And I think Sheryl has really brought that conversation to the fore and made us confront a bunch of things that we weren't willing to confront before. She made us confront this both at a macro level with some of the work that she's doing with, you know, the Lean In projects, you know, with Adam Grant. She's been doing a bunch of research around some of the barriers structurally, but then also the micro conversations, these Lean In circles where people have conversations with each other about what's holding them back. So it helps to have Sheryl at the company, but it helps more to have her voice actually making it okay for everyone to have this conversation.
Your Women in Product conference was held last September,
yes.
2016.
Yes.
You're going to have another one coming up in this coming fall?
Yes, we're looking for dates for this fall.
And do you develop an agenda? Like, these are the things that we think are the most important things to address for women in product at this time?
So beyond the conference, we're actually a nonprofit as well, and we want to do more opportunities for people to meet up and learn skills from each other. So the conference is a moment in time for people to get together at once a year. But really, across time, we want to work on skill building and education and actually scale and partner with a number of different organizations.
You are so confident in the way that you're approaching, you know, a review that doesn't make sense to you, or what you think is the, you know, the right way to structure a company so that it's right for its employees. And it strikes me that this is just something that comes naturally to you, that you that this is a way that you've felt comfortable approaching your life, and that's not something that you necessarily had to learn. But have you always been like this?
No, Actually, you know, it's funny. I remember telling somebody on my team once, they said, well, you're a natural extrovert. It's easy for you. And I said, actually, I'm not. I was extremely introverted. And so I was in consulting coming out of college. I had an engineering degree. And every review I got was, you're too quiet. You're not connecting with people. You're not actually connecting with the clients. And so I went to business school at Stanford. And one of the classes I learned, I took was organizational behavior. And in organizational behavior, we talk about how organizations are formed, how people are successful. And one of the things it said was really building connections and influence in an organization was very important. And so in the final exam, it says, what will you change about yourself after taking this class? And I wrote, I will be an extrovert at work. And, you know, this is part of that growth mindset we talk about, which is in a lot of workplaces, especially in a role of product management, it's very important to be able to influence. And it's not really about being an extrovert. It's really about being willing to take the risk to speak up. And I found it very difficult for a long time. But as I was telling somebody the other day, I said, look, it was a product manager. I'm like, if you PM'd yourself, like you PM your product, if you said, here's the things I need to do to be successful in this environment, and one of those things was speaking up and actually having those hard conversations and pushing back when it doesn't make sense, it's standing up for yourself, it's asking the hard questions. If that was a thing that was necessary between you and success, you would go do it. Because if that were your product, you would do it. And it was really interesting to see their reaction to that, because they were like, oh, you know, I never thought about it that way. And so I really treat career growth as a way of constant growth and improvement. Like, are you taking the feedback and actually making changes? Are you listening? Are you able to unpack those things and make yourself better? And so I've worked really hard on that over the years, but I've really, you know, when I got home, my husband's like, you know, you're so quiet. And I said, I think I've run out of words today.
Yeah.
But I think that's what makes it, what makes us better is our willingness to evolve over time.
I've been thinking a lot lately about how much our the things that we run into as kids influence the way that we deal with things as adults. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to look back and think, oh, there was that pivotal moment, or is that one time I, you know, this or that happened. But I'm curious if you do have anything that you recall from your childhood where you had to stand up to someone who was putting you down, or a situation that seems to have come in handy as an adult.
You know, I grew up in the Deep South in South Carolina. There were not a lot of Asian people at the time there, and I was really, really bullied relentlessly when I was growing up. Being different when you're a kid is very difficult, and I think being different in a way that people didn't understand made it worse. And I remember just, you know, years and years of bullying, and I realized that you have two choices. You can ignore them, you can push back, or you can crumble under the pressure. And I decided that the last one wasn't going to work for me. I've spent many years ignoring. I spent some years pushing back. But I realized that you can't let the outside voices change who you are, because those voices, the ones where there is constant criticism, that's not what should evolve and change you. What should change you are the people who believe in you, the people who are telling you, hey, you can do this. And that's what the teachers in those schools did. They said, look, you can go out there and go to any college you want. You can be successful. You can do this. And those are the voices you should listen to. And so now in the workplace, I think just bringing that forward is to say, look, there's going to be a lot of voices that are just critics. Anytime you put yourself out there, anytime you put a piece of work out there, anytime you build a product, there will always be critics. But there are people who actually are giving you feedback that you should listen to, because they want you to be successful. That feedback really is a gift. And knowing which voice to listen to is the most important thing that you can do.
That was Deb Liu, Vice President of Platform and Marketplace at Facebook, speaking with KALW Inflection Point host Lauren Schiller. Inflection Point is produced at KALW in San Francisco. We now bring you an essay from writer Dr. Jerry Burns.
Walls have been on my mind these days. It's hard to escape it with talk of the wall and other divisive political topics. It tires me, drags down my spirits, and I know it's not healthy to stay in that place all the time, so I try to avoid social media and do my best to talk about other things at home and with friends. But like a lurid little magnet, my tongue is attracted to loaded issues and I jabber away about them after reading upsetting articles. I infuriate myself. Part of what makes this difficult is the negativity. There's so much darkness passed from one person to another, no matter what political camp people are in. I bumped into a friend at a restaurant bar the other night. He shook his head. I just can't look at Facebook anymore. Anthony is not the only one who says that. Sharing important news is important, but news feeds feed hatred and despair, too. I'm afraid that walls are being built higher and thicker between people, not just countries. But I saw a different kind of wall last month, a breath of sunshine in all this negativity. I was walking on the SUNY New Paltz campus to teach my communication class when I came upon a few students near the Humanities Building. They had piles of papers, boxes of markers, a roll of duct tape, joyful energy, and a sparky idea. "Come help us build a better wall," they cried at me. What do you mean? They told me that I could put up a brick, a paper brick, to build something up, just like other people had done. So I looked. Hanging on the wall behind them were some sheets of paper, one next to the other, with duct tape for mortar. "We're asking people to tell us who they are and what they're fighting for. We want this to be a wall of good things to reach for in these hard times." I walked over to the wall and read, "I am Quincy, and I am fighting for basic human rights. I am a sister fighting for my little sister with disabilities. I am a sexual assault survivor, and I am fighting for justice for those who can't fight for themselves." With only a few paper bricks on the building's wall, I was already feeling how strong a wall it was going to be. I grabbed a pen and paper and added my brick to the others. The project was the brainchild of a student named Deanna. With the help of some friends, this spirited young visionary turned her idea into reality. "Isn't my best friend a genius?" one woman said to me before she called, like a street vendor, to some passing students, "Come help us build a better wall." After my class, I checked on the wall's progress. It was significant. The entire length of the wall was rebricked with paper bricks as high as the tallest student could reach. "I am human, and I am fighting for humanity. I am me, and I am fighting for happiness." With all the negativity that has been swirling around, this was a positive moment where I was filled with the proactive energy that this wall reflected, energy that different people share, energy and desire to make the world a better place. There were no party affiliations on the wall, no name-calling. The paper bricks didn't focus on misery. They were laid with hope and purpose. "I am Kira, and I am fighting for my niece to grow up accepted. I am an Afro-Caribbean student, and I am fighting for the lives of Black people. I'm a queer woman, and I'm fighting for what is right." Some of the messages reflected bold social issues. Some were statements of personal growth. But because they all looked forward, positively asserting self and vision, Deanna's wall became a wall of positivity. And it was just what I needed. Seeing all the sentiments of so many different people in one place was like a power surge to my heart. "I'm an immigrant, and I am fighting for the America my parents were promised. I am no one, and I am fighting for everyone." When we think of walls, we think of division. But this project reframed the word wall. Instead of dividing, this wall united a community of gloriously individual strangers who each wished to build something positive for the future. Looking at my own paper brick built into this mosaic of vision and purpose felt good. I am a storyteller, and I am fighting for happy endings for all. If you want to see pictures of the wall and peruse the paper bricks that read like a poetry slam, check out the hashtag #BuildABetterWall on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Perhaps you too will be energized and touched when you encounter Deanna's wall of positivity.
Dr. Jerry Burns is a storyteller, writer, and educator living in New York's Hudson Valley. You can find her at storycrafters.com. She also is an adjunct professor in the Department of Communication at the State University of New York at New Paltz. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1446.